The sound of heavy breathing woke me before dawn. I rolled over and saw, by the glow of the alarm clock, Daniel doing push-ups in the floor. I propped myself up on my elbow. "What on earth are you doing?" he gasped. "I couldn't sleep." "How long have you been at that?" "Don't know," he huffed. "Long time, I guess." "About last night," he huffed again. "That cannot happen anymore." "No, it cannot," I said. I flipped on my lamp beside the bed. "Ow, my eyes," he said, and then collapsed onto his stomach. He lay there exhausted on the floor, his hair, face, and t-shirt soaked in sweat. "We've got to be more careful." I thought about it, and you know what? "We were tired," I said. "That was all. People can't think straight when they're tired, and sometimes they're tempted to do things they wouldn't normally think about doing." "That's what it was," he said. "We were tired." He buried his face in his arms, still gasping for breath. How many push-ups had he done, anyway? "You're making me tired just watching you," I said. "Is that why you're trying to kill yourself doing push-ups? Because we had an awkward moment?" He chuckled. "An awkward moment, huh? So that's what you call it." "What would you call it?" "A near mishap." He sat back on his rump, arms resting on his knees, head bent forward. "And no, that's not why I couldn't sleep. I can't stop thinking. That's all." He looked up at me, wiping his face on his shirt tail. "Where did that Morgan character go? Why would he send us to that bar if he knew that Daniel wasn't there?" But what eats at me most was the guy's accent. "What do you mean, accent? He was from Eastern Kentucky, maybe West Virginia." "No, that's why I can't sleep. I think he's faking it."
"You mean like you do?"
He gave me a stern look. "I don't fake anything, you know, unless I'm trying to get in some information or something. When I got to college, I worked really hard to curb my accent. Now, I find it convenient to slip back and forward between standard English and our local dialect, depending upon the situation. This guy was different. He wasn't like me, a person who slips in and out without thinking about it. His speech was too deliberate, too pronounced. Like maybe he was trying to sound super hillbilly. As my grandpa would say, he ain't from around here. But he has lived here long enough to fool most people into believing that he's from somewhere close by." I sat on the side of the bed. "I don't get it. What good does it do in helping us find Bob?" Daniel rubbed his hands through his disheveled black hair. "Have you ever known you were onto something, but you couldn't quite put all the pieces together?" "I haven't been very good at that sort of thing," I said. "I mean, I should have seen what was coming with Uncle Fawcett, but I didn't. And Bob, well, I've been pretty naive and borderline stupid." "Ah, you weren't stupid," Daniel said. He looked toward the dark screen of the motel TV. "You were just in survival mode. Sometimes it's hard to think straight when you're in survival mode, and the sad thing is that it can last for years. I'm guessing you've operated in survival mode since your daddy died and you became everybody's backbone." "Oh, don't make excuses for me," I said. He gave me a quick little crooked smile. "Well, at least it gives us another piece to this puzzle. And that's a small victory of sorts. I think we should celebrate."
"Celebrate how?"
He stood. "By going to eat breakfast, of course." We ate a complimentary breakfast in a little kitchen nook at that motel. Then Daniel said we needed to make a pit stop on our hunt for Bob.
"Okay, where are we going?"
"Remember I told you that my dad was in the army and that he died when I was a kid and I spent the remainder of my childhood not far from Mercy?"
"Yeah, well, My grandpa's farm is about an hour from here. Of course, my grandparents are both dead now, but my Aunt Elaine lives there. She and Uncle Zach inherited the farm. My uncle was killed in a tractor accident about 5 years ago, and Aunt Elaine has been running the farm ever since. She's getting on up in years, pushing 70, maybe. Great woman. Truth is that she became a second mom to me after cancer claimed my mother. I call her a lot, but I haven't seen her in 2 months. I thought maybe we could spend a couple of days with her, if you don't care. But Cookie will be worried about me. He handed me his cell. Call her. As he drove us to his aunt's house, he said, "There's a few things I should probably tell you. First off, Aunt Elaine is real spiritual." "You mean she goes to church and talks about the Bible a lot?" "Yes," he said. "She does those things, but that's not what I mean. I mean she is literally spiritual." I still didn't get it. "Well, you know how I have a talent for sizing people up? Multiply that times uncanny. She knows things about people, things that nobody could ever guess." "Are you saying she's psychic or something?" I ask. "Some people might use that word, but not Aunt Elaine. She calls her abilities spiritual gifts. She has always claimed that she can hear from the spirit world. And I have to admit, she's pretty amazing. I want you to be aware of it so that if she looks at you and tells you something about yourself, you won't be scared." Daniel's Aunt Elaine lived on a country road. When we reached her house, I had no idea where I was since I wasn't familiar with the area. Her big white farmhouse with a post porch that wrapped halfway around it sat at the end of a gravel lane which ran between two fields of wildflowers and hay. Daniel must have called her while I was in the bathroom at the motel because she was waiting on the porch, looking for us when we pulled into the drive. A big rust-colored dog, the one from Daniel's photo album, lay at her feet. She stood as we got out of the vehicle, a small but regal woman in an oversized work shirt with gray-streaked black hair that hung to her hips. I guessed her between 65 and 70. She came at Daniel with arms wide open and a broad smile on her chiseled face that had obviously spent years working in the fields under summer suns. They came together with a dynamic embrace, and I knew in an instant that this woman meant as much to Daniel as Uncle Fawcett meant to me. And the rusty dog was there too, jumping on Daniel, wagging his tail. Daniel released his aunt and turned to me. "Aunt Elaine, this is Razzie McQuaid." She turned her full attention on me and smiled. That's when I saw the family resemblance. She and Daniel had the same kind black eyes and disarming warm smile. "Razzie, an unusual name," she said. "Yes, it is," I said, amazed at how good it felt not to be humiliated at being introduced as Cupcake. I mentally kicked myself again for not adopting such a nickname earlier in my life. "Are you Danny's girl?" she asked. I shook my head. No, Marion is Daniel's girl. I'm just a friend he picked up along the way." He gave me a faint and sympathetic smile, but his eyes told me that he was pleased with my answer. She looked over at him. "A friend in trouble, no doubt." She petted the big dog that was sniffing at my feet now. "Daniel Ransom has been picking up strays his whole life, rescuing everything from tailless lizards to mangy old dogs." Then she chuckled. "And he always begs to keep them. Last girl he took in, he married." I glanced over at him. He had his head hung like a little boy who was being talked about by parents as if he weren't there. "I'm still married to her," he mumbled. "It's okay," I said. "He's already decided to send me back to the pound as soon as we locate my leash." There was a bit of tension in the air when I said that. Elaine looked from Daniel to me and back again. Then she burst into laughter. Come on in, kiddos. I've made us some lemonade. I smelled cinnamon the moment Elaine opened the front door. When we entered the house, we were at the foot of a dark wooden staircase that turned as it ascended. It looked like a picture from a Better Homes and Garden magazine. Above the first landing on the staircase was a round window of stained glass. Mid-morning sun filtered through it, casting colorful patterns all over the gold-colored walls. The sight of that window above the staircase took my breath away. Or maybe it was the smell of something delicious baking. I knew in a heartbeat that it was apple pie.
Sure smells good, Daniel said.
Knew you were coming, she said. Wish I could say that it was homemade. But he didn't give me a heads up, so I had to stick a frozen one in the oven. I assumed she meant Daniel hadn't called her in time. As we passed from the entryway into the living room, I stared at the high ceilings and beautiful natural woodwork that trimmed everything. We continued into the kitchen, past the dining area. I noted that every room had high ceilings and natural wood, and each room was painted in warm hues. Light pouring through large, scantily clad windows filled the house, making it both spacious and grand, but yet feeling cozy and warm. If ever I had seen my dream home, Elaine was living in it. This is what I had always wanted our pink farmhouse to be when I was a kid. Somebody had worked hard at creating and maintaining this beautiful place. Your house is beautiful, I said. It's just an old farmhouse, she said, but she smiled and I knew that it made her feel good that I had shown admiration. She led us through the dining room with a massive dark table set beneath an antique chandelier. The only other furniture in the room was a wood and glass display cabinet. The table sat in front of a bay window that looked out at her wooded backyard. I stood there, staring at those woods and the pretty picnic area someone had created behind the house. She stopped beside me while Daniel meandered on into the kitchen. This was my parents' home. My daddy built that picnic area. Did you know that Danny lived here from the time he was 10 years old onward? After his daddy got killed in the service, his mama, my baby sister, brought him back to the only place she could call home, here. You see that big oak tree over yonder? When Danny was 11 years old, he decided that he was going to build a tree house. Boards are still there. He used to climb up there and sit for hours at a time. You know what he was doing? I shook my head, no telling. Playing like he was high up on a stage singing, she said. Danny boy wanted to be a rock star. That is, until he fell off the stage and broke his arm. Aunt Elaine, he said from the dining room doorway, holding an apple and a peeling knife. Don't tell her stuff like that. You don't know this woman. She will use it against me at some point. Danny boy, I said. Then I giggled because if looks could kill, Daniels would have struck me dead. He sliced off a piece of apple and bit into it. You are not allowed to call me that. Only people who knew me when I was 6 are allowed to call me that. He was serious, and that made it hilarious to me. He really hated to be called Danny Boy. I ain't a boy from a song, he said, then turned and went back into the kitchen. Elaine and I looked at each other and laughed. She had done that on purpose, just to stir him up. Elaine's kitchen was adjacent to the dining room and was done in the same natural wood and had hanging ceiling lights. Like the rest of the house, it had large windows that ran above the sink. An island sat in the center, while a breakfast bar ran the length of one wall. A screened-in back door led onto a porch where a big white swing faced a gravel road running parallel to that side of the house. Daniel took a seat at the breakfast bar and continued eating his apple. Now don't you fill up on apples, Elaine said. We're going to have a good lunch. Can I help you with anything? I asked. She can't cook, Daniel said. The girl lives off pork chops and chili, snack cakes, and stuff like that. I can too, cook. Elaine touched me on the shoulder. Oh, don't pay him any mind. He's just messing with you. Then Daniel winked at me. She's right. I was trying to get you riled up. Then he got up. I'm going upstairs to do some work on the internet. Holler when you ladies are ready for me. He took his apple and knife with him. At Elaine's suggestion, I took a head of cabbage from her vegetable drawer and began making coleslaw. She was patting out hamburgers on the kitchen island. So, did Daniel tell you I knew you'd be coming today? He told me that you are a very spiritual person, I said. He said sometimes you know things about people. That's true, she said. But there's another reason I knew he'd come see me. I wasn't sure what time it'd be. She peered into the dining room. It's his birthday. That boy always comes home on his birthday. Always has. Don't get me wrong. He spends Christmas and all other holidays with Marion, but he never fails to show up on my doorstep right around his birthday. Do you know why? I shook my head. Although he has lived all over the place, this is the only place on earth where he's truly free. He used to bring Marion with him, and the first few times he came without her, it was downright heartbreaking. But still, he came. He's alive when he's here. That sheriff's office, that's not my Danny. This farm, this is Danny. I stirred mayonnaise into the slaw. Why was she telling me this? Didn't she understand that I didn't need to feel any more affection for Daniel? That I needed to concentrate on finding Bob? Didn't she understand that Daniel only wanted to think of Marion? Neither of us wanted any more temptations or distractions in our lives, and that being here was supposed to be a safe haven, a place where a third party would help govern us and keep us apart, not make my heart yearn for him or cause me to want to throw my arms around him. Didn't she get that? She put the burgers on the grill she had already turned on and heated. So, you hope to find something while you're here? Excuse me, I said. I sense that you're looking for something, or maybe someone. Daniel didn't tell you. Tell me what? He didn't even call me ahead of time. Never does. It's his birthday. I knew he was coming. He didn't tell me anything about you. But I know that you're searching. Maybe for your soulmate. My husband, I said. He's missing. I told her about the bike while we worked on slicing tomatoes and onions, told her about Bob's job at the chicken factory, and about how he always came home at the same time, and how we always ate the same things for supper, and about Cookie, and about Uncle Fawcett. I told her about how I felt guilty and thought maybe it was my fault that Bob had left, and sometimes I was terrified that he was dead. I told her how I went 4 days without eating, and that Daniel came along and made me eat. He made me go with him to investigate Bob's shed. Then I told her about how he let me stay on his boat because he understood that I couldn't go home and face a house without Bob, nor could I face my sister while I was in such a depressed state. Then I told her that Daniel had taken his vacation time to help me find my husband, the elusive Porkchop McQuaid, because he said that any couple's happiness that can be restored should be restored. That sounds like Daniel, she said. By then lunch was ready, so she sent me to get him. Told me to go to the second room on the right at the top of the stairs. As I started up the stairs, I was sidetracked by the photographs lining her rail, so that a person could study them as she ascended or descended the stairs. There were pictures of young Elaine, who once looked enough like Daniel to have been his twin sister, embracing a handsome young man. There was a picture of them in front of a sign that read Niagara Falls, and one in front of what was apparently the Grand Canyon. My favorite was a photo of Elaine in an aviator cap aboard a hot air balloon. From these photos, it was plain to see that Elaine had not only loved wholeheartedly, she had lived that way. There were many pictures of another woman who also looked like Daniel and Elaine. In fact, she was alongside Elaine in several photographs, so I reckon that to be Daniel's mother. There were many photographs of people I had no idea about, and of course there were pictures of Daniel, many taken when he had been a child. There was Daniel with a puppy, and Daniel proudly displaying a catch of fish along with his grandpa. He was so cute that I reached out and touched the photograph. I decided to look at these again later when I had more time, and maybe I would ask Elaine about some of them. I found Daniel at a laptop in a bedroom. He sat opposite a quilt-covered antique bed at a windowsill desk, pecking away on the laptop. "Hey," I called from the doorway. "Your aunt says come down and eat unless you've filled up on apples already." "Okay," he said. He closed the laptop and followed me down the stairs. As we cleared away the dishes, Daniel said, "It's hot out today." Elaine said, "It's late July, Danny. It's hot out every day." "But you should go swimming, maybe." Daniel stared at the gravel lane running past the kitchen window. "Yeah, we should go swimming." "Not me," Elaine said. "I'm far too old for that stuff. Besides, I've got to run into town for some things. Why don't you two go ahead? In fact, you should show Razzie your old swimming hole." "I can't swim," I said. "What?" Daniel scoffed. "You work at a marina and you can't swim?" "I clean boats, not dive for pearls." Elaine laughed. "It's never too late to learn. I was once as slender as you are now. There's a swimsuit in that spare bedroom, Daniel. First drawer on the right." I knew I was hanging onto that thing for a reason. She took her purse off the hook by the door and went outside. "She's right," Daniel said. "You need to learn how to swim." "I've lived 34 years without knowing how to swim," I said. "Why should I learn now?" "Because," he grabbed me by the arm, "I intend to throw you in, and if you can't swim, you'll drown." "You wouldn't do that," I said. "You're teasing." He didn't respond, but swept me along through the dining room. "You're kidding," I said again. He didn't say anything, just kept ushering me along. We reached the staircase. I halted at the first step and turned, spreading my arms and legs to inhibit his pathway upstairs. "Daniel," I said. He stepped up to me, his face even with mine. "I'll teach you." I remembered how he had almost kissed me the night before and backed away. "Okay, you do that."